are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. And welcome to Journeys with JP. Let me just start the recording. Welcome to Journeys with JP. I'm here with Terrell. I was just producing on Studio A, and the show starts about like 5 minutes in, so I was being all very relaxed and comfortable, and I realized that, no, the show was, yeah, I'm still muted. No, I'm not muted. I just wasn't on the air. So I will... Hi. So anyway, I'll just say hello to everybody here in Radioland on Studio B now. I've just been on Studio A for the last 2 hours. It's all very confusing. I'll be doing Strange Universe on Studio A on Wednesday and on Friday in conjunction with Steve, and we'll have a good old Batman and Alfred. Robin and Alfred kind of evening. So tonight my guest is a gentleman who I've heard about and I've heard of, and I've heard a few of his videos, but never having spoken directly until about 5 minutes ago. But he approached me, and we've just been discussing. He knows where I'm at. He knows where you're at because you've been listening to mine. So without any further ado, because a lot of people know you already, so you need very little introduction. So welcome, Terrell.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. Star Trekker is a big fan. He called me on the phone and said, you have to go on the radio with JP. So I said, okay. So I hooked up with Vaubert, very good friend of mine, and she hooked us up, and happy to do the show with you.
Ah, right. Excellent. We hear typing. No Studio B? I mean, let me just check. I am definitely on Studio B. Mic is off. Yeah, you can hear me, can't you?
Hear you fine.
Yeah, we're on the conversation. Okay. Oh, a mutant. All quite good, JP. Right, okay. Right, okay. So I think we are all here, and I think we're all there. So Star Trekker said you got to go on Journeys, and yeah, because the level that you're coming in on is kind of, it's much, you know, it's a heads up. You know, lots of people don't look up. This is the thing in most of society. Most animals, in fact, don't look up. Somebody was saying, like, a pig, an actual pig, cannot look above itself. It doesn't know what's going on, so that's how you can kill them. So they've probably been genetically bred to not be able to look up to see what's coming. Poor little fellows. Oh. So tonight, Terrell, here we are. Welcome to Journeys.
Yeah, I'm curious on which direction that you want to go.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I know you're big on is the incoming objects. I've been speaking for, well, objects and energies. I've been speaking for several years now on this thing called the galactic wave, which is a ripple out from the galactic central sun, to arrive here. So that's one, but that's something that happens on a multitude of levels all at the same time. You know, it's happening on a solar level, planetary level, galactic level, supergalactic level. Is that right?
I think you're referring to like the work of Paul LaViolette in his superwave theory. In his focus, he's focusing on May of 2014, much like I am. And I included that in a recent newsletter about three newsletters ago. And I think there's a lot of people looking at May 2014. Seems to be a convergence of thought in that direction. It just turns out to be that's the crossing date. That's the date that we crossed this black star's orbit path. And I'm running out of room in the orbit diagram. So there's another pie shape from our last event last year. And whenever I open it up to make allowance for the increase in velocity, then it hits right on May the 20th, 2014. But that is an open window, an event window, and the May 20th date doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen exactly on that date.
All right, Terrell.
That's an event window.
Let's just make sure that we're all on the same play sheet and make sure that we're all talking about the same things and things like that. So not only it's like it's very complex, right? Not only is there the galactic wave and the super wave and La Voyolette and all these things, but there's also objects that are dense and heavy and magnetic and large. And that's never a good combination, I've always thought. And far, and moving fast. Is this what you're talking about? Is that the dark star?
That's right. Although when you say large, think large mass, but it occupies very small space. So for example, a brown dwarf star that is half the sun mass is only 50% larger than Earth. So the disinformation you see on the internet, you see they're trying to give you the size of Earth and Jupiter than a brown dwarf, that is not real. Brown dwarfs are actually extremely small. They're very compressed. There's no space in between the subatomic particles. It makes them highly dense. And whenever you get into a black star range, which our solar system is not old enough to contain a black dwarf star naturally as a peripheral dwarf, but if our binary twin compressed, if it collapsed and imploded, then we can get a white dwarf, brown dwarf, black dwarf, a Magnetar-type neutron star or something else. You don't really know what you're going to get when a star implodes. Kind of like the way I describe it to people is inside the Earth, the way diamonds are formed. You can get a lump of coal, or you can get a diamond, or anything in between. So this object appears to be our binary twin. It appears to come in to the inner solar system every 3,600 years, but there's speculation about that. I don't know if that's 100% true. It could be, when you're dealing with a binary, then there's two kinds, the kind of suns that orbit one another and the kind of suns that orbit a third point in space. But even though if this turns out to be a ladder situation, which it could, and still provide the same phenomenon that we're seeing, then there are still two points where those two stars cross in their orbit, and that could be what we're looking at. So it could be that this star does not actually come in the way that I'm thinking that it does, but that would fulfill the precedence in the, for instance, about Nibiru. Nibiru means planet of crossing, and it would, if you go back in time 3,600 years, you're in the days of Moses. If you go back 3,600 years before that, you have the times of Noah. So there's a pattern there that shows, well, catastrophe for our planet. And if you read Christ in Matthew 24, then he describes, well, pretty much the same thing, but much severe. So what I believe is those three events have a complement. They have another event that is that when the day of the Lord begins, it comes like a thief in the night. And this thing that's coming is also coming like a thief in the night. And it's causing global warming. It's causing the magnetic pole migration of our magnetic North Pole. It's causing the solar flare activity that we're seeing, extreme solar flare activity around the earthquake events. We have a seismic pattern that goes back for years. That's what I'm using to track the thing. And, well, we have a convergence, like I said, here in May of 2014. So if that's what you're asking, is this what we're talking about?
Dark
that's what we're
star.
Talking about.
Yes, dark star. And this, as you said, the planet of the crossing. This moment is the moment of the crossing. This is the X. And it's interesting that chromosomes are often depicted as like an X form, a cruciform. We have this word that falls everywhere, a chrysalis, a cross, having a cross to bear. All of these terminologies and words that come to the same thing, Celtic cross, Christian cross, ancient cross. Mm-hmm. Cross of Hende has talked about this moment where the sun is angry and the moon is weird and all of this stuff, and Jay Widener has been going on about that. And I still want to, I watched that the other day with Jay Widener, and it blew my mind, and I have to watch it about three more times to actually hear what he was saying, but it's fascinating stuff. But the moment of the crossing. Now, we know that when we have an eclipse, that means that the Earth and the Sun and the Moon are all parallel. They're all in the same flat horizontal dimension. They're all in the same dimensional flat plane. That's why the shadow falls. So right now, we're in the midst of various eclipses. So something is a zero point, a crossing point. That's the point I'm trying to make, is that the sun and the moon and the earth are at a zero point. That's what the eclipse means. So that gives more credence to this point of crossing. And I've always felt that April, this is what my feeling was, that something would be starting in April. So I think that there's a grand cross that's starting in a couple of weeks. When, is it Mars moves into position and it stays like a cross for quite a while until Mars moves out of that cross position? Is there something going on like that?
Well, the Earth is, we're coming between, the Sun and Mars are in opposition. We're coming between Mars, but I do not believe that Mars is a player. Mars does not have a robust magnetosphere like Earth and Saturn. And it's going to be a little bit later. We're going to be in opposition, or the Sun and Saturn will be in opposition on May the 10th. So we will be right between Saturn and the Sun on May the 10th. We'll be crossing right through there. And there's going to be magnetic portal connections that come into play. There's a magnetic umbilical cord that runs from the Sun to the Earth. And there's another one, a larger one, that runs out to Saturn. And there's an even larger one that runs to the black star. So whenever Earth is at outside orbit position, that happened on February the 1st, then those magnetic portal connections created a right triangle when we were at the far end of the orbit. Then we start moving towards the black star, and those angles start closing. And as we're coming up to that alignment, these magnetic portal connections, they get very close to one another, and then you get portal-to-portal cross-firing, and that's what kicks off the solar flares. In the 2011 orbit cycle, our solar flare activity was focused in March and September. And the next year, they moved around, one month. And now everything is moving into May. The most recent event on the Black Star timeline took place on October the 25th, 2013. And it was predicted ahead of time, happened a little later than I thought. But we had the cluster of X-class flares, as predicted, on the eastern limb. The reason is because that angle is coming in as we come into outside orbit position. It's very predictable on the eastern limb. Then we have the alignment event that happened on with the Japan 7.3 and on October 25th, 2013. And then we had the singular event, which was predicted also, X-class flare on the western limb. And the reason that happens is once Earth passes behind the Sun and then moves on, these magnetic portal connections cross, and then they loop together. They're actually pulled together magnetically, and then they pull apart. Whenever they pull apart, we get that big X-class flare on the backside. And that's exactly what we had on October the 28th, 2013, with the X3.3. Then we see a downslope in the seismicity, which we did. We should have a downtick in the volcanism, which we did not. The Earth core remained extremely, extremely hot. It did not cool down on the recent low period, which means that the black star is closer than it was on previous orbits, so that when we moved to outside orbit position, we should have been outpacing it in the magnetic portal connection. It's getting a little bit complicated, but the magnetic portal connection between the black star and the Earth was supposed to lengthen, causing us to get less electromagnetism, but it did not. In other words, our movement in the orbit diagram did not outpace black star velocity. So its velocity has picked up so much that our move to outside orbit position is not allowing the Earth to cool down. So Earth core remained, they measured in 2013. Earth core was 1,000 degrees hotter than any time previously recorded. That's the reason we're seeing the volcanoes going off around the world, and we're seeing the seismicity that we're seeing. So since Earth could not outpace, since the Earth core did not cool down, what happens is we move into an uptick period, which we have on the last three orbit cycles, very predictable. We've been able to predict the week that we would have the least number of earthquakes, the least number of indicator quakes. We predicted it right on the button. This year we couldn't do that because Earth core remained so hot that the caterpillar crawl effect, that the rubbing of the tectonic plates, did not slow down. So what happened on the two previous cycles was the caterpillar crawl stopped because Earth core cooled, and then when it kicks off again, we get a pair of 7-magnitude quakes. We didn't get those quakes either. So what we're looking at in the symptoms is our ability to build accurate predictive models is being destroyed, and this is what happens when the black star is here. So now what happens is all of our high magnitude seismic events are pushed to the back half of the uptick period, and we're entering that period now. Now, we're going to continue moving towards the black star, and the magnetic portal connection between the black star and the Earth is shortening based on Earth velocity. As we move in closer, it's going to be shortening on based on Earth velocity and black star velocity combined. And that's whenever, leading up to May the 20th, that we're going to see severe, severe events on our planet. As these magnetic portal connections come together, you're going to see a cluster of X-class flares, I believe, in the first week of May. And then we're going to have a quake event very similar to the Philippine Island event that took place on October the 15th, 2013. We had M-class flares leading up, a singular C on the backside of that. So we're going to see a early series of flares when we're Earth is preparing to move between the Sun and Saturn. That's going to be the first of the second week on the 10th. We're going to see a cluster of flares right there. That's going to be the warning that I've been warning people about. That means we should anticipate extremely large X-class flares in the second to the third week, transitioning to the third week. And there's definitely something out there. It's extremely magnetic. It's trying to wrestle magnetic polarity control from our sun. It has not been able to do that because the sun is very powerful. It can only wrestle magnetic polarity control from the sun when we get in very near proximity. So this object that's coming in here, it behaves more like a black hole than it does. That's why some people they're seeing balls of energy that are out there, and they're wondering what the heck's going on. And I believe they're tracking the same thing that I'm tracking. And I actually think that Paul LaViolette is tracking the same thing I'm tracking too. And that's what, but he sees it. He can't see it. I can't see it either. But I see it as the binary twin to our sun. And he sees it as a super wave that's coming in here. So there's a convergence in the Earth. The Earth changes. There's a convergence in the research of lots of researchers around the world. And this period that we're coming into now seems to be a focal point, May of 2014.
Which is next month.
That's right.
Which is like well up close. So we don't have to wait till too long. But, you know, I've been watching the sun since, 1998. I was an early taker with the whole internet thing and watching Soho and, see how they, and the SDO, I've watched this whole thing. So I've been watching the sun since then. I was involved with the whole millennium bug thing going on in 98 and 99. Skip, if you're still listening, my friend in Australia, he was also involved there. But one of the things that we were concerned about were the things that were going on in the sun. So we were watching the solar flares that were happening then. And there were some that Skip and his wife were watching, and it actually made the atmosphere of the planet grow. The amount of plasma that hit the Earth at that time made the plasma, the atmosphere grow by 12 miles. That was the figure that I got. So I've been watching that. Now that happens, that used to happen like, once, you know, maybe every couple of years we get a big old flare. And as the years have gone by, this frequency has gone up and up and up and up and up, you know, and it's not like because we're measuring it better. No. It's because the activity has upticked. That is why the cameras are pointing towards the sun, so that we can all share in this spectacular event and hopefully survive it. I got various ideas about, you know, the process of that, but when I looked at was it Monday? I got this feeling, something's going on. I feel there's weird stuff going on. And then I looked at the SDO and the Soho movies, and I saw, you remember I was saying, you know, we used to get this like once every few months. We had like two CMEs in like a day of each other. They went boom, boom, and then there's this massive cloud as it approached the Earth, and it approached the Earth, and it was like quicker than the models told them it would be. Yeah, the stuff is really rushing out. So there must be something that is receiving this energy. This is what you're talking about. Every CME is pointed towards a vector that is going to eventually collect that energy, and the dark star is drawing these CMEs out, and it's making the sun going, you know, it's going off like that.
Right. Well, the initial CME is going to clear the way for the second one. So the second one's going to have increased velocity. It's going to push, and those two waves, the second wave can even catch the first wave. So the second wave, many times, especially a third wave that comes through the same area, each wave is going to have quicker velocity. It's going to catch that initial one that's cleaning the way for the others. But the uptick that you're talking about in the solar flares, that's going to have to do with the magnetics, with the black star. So this black star is connected through an umbilical cord to our sun. And whenever another planet comes in proximity so that the magnetic portal connection gets close enough, then you get firing between the magnetic portals. And that's what causes these waves. And then the sun interprets that electromagnetism as a foreign body, and it starts defending itself by shooting out solar flares. So the activity that we've seen for the last years, like I said, has moved around the zodiac from March to April to May. And the black star was responsible for Fukushima, for example. That was on March 11th, 2011. The year before that, it was Chile at 8.8, February 27th, 2010. Then in 2012, we predicted the Guerrero event that took place. It was predicted for the 22nd. It actually happened on the 20th. But leading up to that, we had the most important event, and this gets to the crux of your question. The magnetosphere turned around for the Boshock point at the Virgo constellation and for the magnetopause to point at the sun for 28 hours. Now, to have that kind of phenomenon, then you have to have the presence of another star. That's the only way. But the influence, the direct influence from the black star did not cause the magnetopause reversal. It was because of these converging magnetic portal connections and that crossfiring that I was telling you about. So that's what my warning is about for May. And it's a very clear pattern when you go back in time. But there's a point that I wanted to make. You were talking about the year 2000. That's when we had our last solar maximum. And since then the heliosphere surrounding our solar system has shrunk by 25%, and the scientists don't know why. Then solar cycle 24 was supposed to come up and peak in 2012 or 2013. It actually had a small spike in the end of 2011 and then flatlined, so that the X-ray flux values and the sunspot formation, those curves follow one another, reaching solar maximum. They both went straight down. Right now, the sun's output is about one-third normal. So how do you explain that? Our star is under the influence of another star, and our sun has not reached solar maximum. As they say, if you listen to suspicious observers, and he'll tell you that, he follows the magnetics very carefully, and it appears that the sun was trying to reach solar maximum, but the polarity is still the same as it was leading up to whenever it should have reached. But there's not enough internal pressure inside the sun for the poles to flip. And the reason, in my view, we're not reaching a modern minimum or anything like that, like we did in the 1800s. Three cycles were ruined because of that. But the symptoms that we're looking at now are different. The shrinking heliosphere, the weakening magnetosphere, the magnetic pole migration, mass animal deaths. Whenever you combine everything together with the seismic pattern and with the pattern of solar flares, then the only answer for me is that there is something that has moved through Leo. It's already moved through Virgo now. It's now in Libra, and it's getting ready to go into Scorpio, and it is definitely increasing in velocity. So if this was a wave, I would not expect that it's going to increase in velocity. It's going to have a constant velocity as it's moving out and it spreads. Okay. But if this is a star, then it's going to increase velocity as it's reaching perihelion, because it has a planetary relationship with our sun. So when it's far away, it moves slow. When it comes close, it moves fast. And when it's closest to the sun, it's going maximum velocity. So when I look at the symptoms and look at the evidence, the only answer that I have today is that there is an invisible black star, binary twin-like star, to our sun that is getting closer and closer and closer. It's accelerating velocity. It's allowing us to make these predictions that are coming true. And you know, everything comes back again to May 2014, which I hope is wrong. But if I am wrong, I'm going to learn something, because, like I said, I'm out of room in the orbit diagram. Once time passes beyond July the 7th, that's outside orbit position. That means we cannot have an alignment event with this object passing outside of Earth orbit. It would have to pass between us and the sun. So the fact that we do not have an event on May the 20th, or even in the month of May, or in the month of June, does not mean we're out of the woods. because we're going to outside orbit position, this thing could cross Earth orbit path and still come between us and the sun later in the timeline. And see, we're in the horseshoe. We cross that horseshoe, this elliptical orbit curve, just like like a comet that comes in, and it comes in like a horseshoe. We're entering that horseshoe on May the 20th, and we don't leave it until about November the 20th. So we're susceptible to a geological pole shift for that entire period until we leave the horseshoe and we start moving around to winter orbit, which we're leaving now.
Right. So it's like the circle or the ellipse of our orbit, the spiral of our orbit, is also coinciding. And is this object coming flat on to our orbit, or is it coming in at an angle? And where, I mean, so here I am. I'm sitting here. Where are we? We're in Pisces. So what's opposite Pisces is Virgo. So Virgo is on the other side of the sun, you're saying. So on the other side of the sun from us at this moment in our year, which is the orbit, this object is on the other side of the sun. But you're saying it's going to come round. Is it going to come round from the right? If we're looking at the sun, is it going to come round from the right or the left of the sun?
Okay. I think some of the information you just gave there was incorrect. Right now, the Earth is between the sun and Virgo. We are moving into Libra in the month of May. Okay. So.
Oh, yeah. I always have things backwards. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Yeah, a lot of people in astrology get those things backwards, and they argue with me about it. But I'm talking about an opposition. In other words, the sun is on one side and the black star is on the other side. Just like we're going to pass between the sun and Saturn on May the 10th, same thing with the black star, except for it's going to be May the 20th. So the black star, Saturn, the Earth are all going to be in very near proximity. So the answer to your question is, in 2011, a group of astronomers in Europe was working with me and my astronomer, and they released a number to me, 0.024 degrees below the plane, which made perfect sense. That's the reason that you would have a South Pole telescope, for example. It's not so that you can look straight down below the Earth, but so that you can look laterally, just below the plane, and get a better view, because there's so much junk right on the plane, like the Earth and Jupiter. There's a lot of subatomic particles, dust, debris, everything wants to be on the plane. So from the northern hemisphere, we have to actually look through all that junk in order to see it just below the plane. But if it has 0.024 degrees, which I believe it does, and the object is moving prograde, that's the answer to your question. And that just means it's moving in the same direction as the rest of the planets. So it has already come through Leo in 2008, 9, and 10. It moved into and 11 a little bit when Fukushima happened. It was on the left side of Leo. Then Virgo, our events in April, took place in 2013, and now we're looking for the event whenever the Earth is between the Sun and the left side of Libra moving into Scorpio. So it's on the same plane with us, just a hair below the plane.
Okay, so it's a hair below the plane. Okay, and now I'm looking at the Sun, and say, well, here I am. I'm right up north, 57 degrees north, and I'm watching the sunrise. So if I'm watching the sunrise from this position, it will be coming in behind the sun after it's risen, wouldn't it? Is that right?
It would actually be coming in. If it's a crossing event, then this guy is going to be in the midnight sky.
In the midnight sky? Hang on.
Yes, because remember, it's coming across Earth orbit path from far beyond. It's coming in on its elliptical orbit.
Yeah.
So whenever Earth passes directly between the sun and the black star, then the sun's in the morning, and the black star is in the evening. It's at midnight.
Right. Okay.
So, but then as soon as there's the crossing event happens, it goes, whew, it whooshes right by us, and then it's on the other side of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
The Earth is susceptible to a 180 degree variety geological pole shift in that scenario.
Yeah. Well, I had a dream once a couple of years back, and I was out with some friends, and I looked up in the sky, and it was like, it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that, and I suddenly saw the sun drop vertically out of the sky, and this is in the dream, right? It's like just boom, within seconds, and I thought to myself in that dream, brown dwarf. So I was really cool because I knew what was going on, But at the same time, I thought, hang on, this is the brown dwarf. I've been thinking about this. So that would be what people would experience, wouldn't it? They'd be sitting there in the middle of the day, and suddenly the sun would literally drop from the sky.
That's exactly right, unless you're on the coast, because the Earth crust follows. The Earth crust is embedded with metals, magnetite, iron, and that's what affects Earth's magnetism. So when the Earth magnetic poles, they reverse every 3 to 7 times every million years naturally because of metal redistribution in our planet. But whenever the black star gets in near proximity and Russell's magnetic polarity control from the sun, then the Earth crust will be turned over, but the water will follow the law of gravity. So the eastern shores, or the water is going to crawl up on the eastern shores, and based upon, well, it's a lot of math to do. You have to know the mass ratio of the sun and the black star. You have to know the magnetic polarity strength ratio, how powerful it is relative to the sun. And then you have to know how close it is. So you have those three variables that decide whether we're going to have a sudden geological pole shift or a partial geological pole shift if the thing is farther away. Then the duration is going to depend on proximity. And then at the end of that event, the sun regains magnetic polarity control of our planet and stands the Earth back up again. So you're going to have an original geological pole shift, and that one could be slow. It could be slower because we're dealing with a smaller body. The sun does not give up magnetic polarity control of its planets very easily. This black star is arm wrestling with our sun right now. It's been doing that since about 2004 because that's when the magnetic North Pole started migrating very quickly. So the magnetic North Pole migrating that way is actually the arm wrestling contest between the sun and the black star, wrestling for magnetic polarity control, and the sun is applying more force, keeping us where we're supposed to be. So the sun is having to do more and more to keep us where we're at. So this magnetic polarity, this magnetic pole migration is what it really is. This is a symptom that the Earth is under the influence of another star. And the models that the geologists use for the natural reversal, those models are going to break down. They're not going to work. See, using those models, as the magnetic North Pole moves south, then it breaks into three poles. And the same thing happens with the South Poles. And then they intermingle, and then they switch. Well, our magnetic North Pole is moving rapidly, and it is not dividing. So to me, that means the old models are not applicable here, and it means that we have to make up our own, think outside the box model. And when you add the seismic pattern, the fact that our heliosphere shrunk 25% in just 10 years, when you look at all the symptoms involved, then it means that the reason the magnetic pole is moving is because of the influence of that other star.
I'm very well aware because I've been watching it. Like I say, when I'm looking at the sunrise, I know where it goes every morning. I watch it. And like the old Inuit who are above the Arctic Circle, I'm pretty close to the Arctic Circle, 3 degrees away. So when the Earth is wobbling, I can see it by the change in where the sun rises. And I've got, you know, like trees and things that I see. Yeah, that's where the sun rises. You know, where it rose yesterday, and it gradually sweeps throughout the year and it sweeps back. But there are times when it's just like, that's not where it should be. So yeah. The only explanation from that is that there is something else that is pulling on the planet that is pulling it in a different direction when it's facing that direction. So it like wobbles as it goes round. And one of my guests, Gordon James Gianinotto, I'm sure you've spoken with him.
Oh, I'm sorry, I haven't heard of him.
No. Oh, right. Well, he's all into mass objects and things, and he's got backup film of this. It's a GIF. I can send it to you, but you've probably seen it, as of the Earth wobbling, taken from a satellite. That it as it shifts around, it goes down when the Atlantic faces it, which is showing that
the Inuit Indians are pretty close to you, and they've given the same report.
Yeah,
they depend on the stars, the moon and the sun for their hunting, and when they leave and they come back by it, and they spend a lot of time in the dark, and they reported that things aren't right, that with the solar system, that something is definitely different. And if you remember in 2011, the story came out about Greenland sunrise started 2 minutes earlier and stuff like that. I actually think that is a false report. The reason is because whenever you have 2 minutes off in the northern hemisphere, you should also have 2 minutes off in the southern hemisphere. So somebody, if the sun rises 2 days early, it's going down 2 minutes early in the southern hemisphere. So what you would have is a series of reports along that shadow line, and it would be very symmetrical. And all we had was the singular report from Greenland. So in my mind, that was a false report. We also have long period and short period eclipses, like you were talking about earlier, where the Earth and the Moon and the Sun must be in the right place at the right time. Exactly. And those are still intact at this time. So what I attribute this to is a lot of people are waking up. Their awareness, their consciousness is growing and growing and growing, and they just haven't spent a lot of time outside. But now they are, and sometimes they think things are off when they're not. And I think that phenomenon is what's going on. So this black star behaves more like a black hole than a – it's not like Jupiter, something that if Jupiter came – and remember that Jupiter comes only 3.9 AU from our planet whenever we're at the opposition, when we're right between the two. And it's a heavy mass object, and it's – some people say, well, if it's a heavy mass object, it would destroy the solar system. But Jupiter's a heavy mass object, and we come relatively close to it, and we're not destroyed. But this object appears to have an event horizon. It appears to be more like a black hole. Instead of the matter and things sucked into the black hole falling into a singularity, then it's falling into a very, very small, high-dense object. That's the difference. So it's something between a planet, something between a star and a black hole. But what that means is, as long as we're beyond the event horizon, we're not going to be affected by it. If you look at the models of a black hole, then you'll notice that the things on the perimeter, things that are far away, they're not affected by it at all. But the things inside the event horizon are affected by it. So this thing is like a mini black hole. So the event horizon would be very tight. Any orbitals that it have would be very close. And this thing would have to get right next to us for us to be able to affect us. In other words, in order to change our orbit around the sun, this thing would have to be right next to us. And there's no indication yet that it is inside of Earth orbit path. That it's crossed Earth orbit path.
So it's going to be a bit like we're sitting in a rowing boat and a supertanker goes by. And the water goes up and then it goes down again. We feel the huge wake of this thing going by, but we're not going to be dragged or destroyed by it. We just feel the sense of like bobbing up and down on the wake. Is that what you're talking about?
My commentary was about the events that have already taken place, not what's going to happen. In other words, the Earth is exactly where it's supposed to be. We have a very good astronomer with his own observatory class telescope, infrared equipment. We know that it's not a brown dwarf star, because if it was, we could see it. This is another classification of star. But what I'm talking about, what you're asking about now, is whenever the black star is here, when it's actually in near proximity. In that case, the thing that turns Earth over is not a wake or a wave or anything like that, is actual magnetism, Earth metals responding. So the reason that the Earth stands straight up and down right now with the sun is because the sun has magnetic polarity control, and the largest magnetite deposit on Earth is under the North Pole. If that large magnetite deposit shifts, we're going to have a new North Pole. So it has to do with the combined metal distribution in our planet, not just magnetite and iron, but salts and everything combined together. Because all metals conduct energy through induction. So
it's a bit like a battery with a steel cap.
And the whole Earth is a conductor. Even the salts in the rocks are conductors. So the primary source of electromagnetism, obviously, is the sun. That's what is normal for our Earth. And that's the way the Earth is behaving. But when you introduce the other star, so right now our Earth is bipolar, because we have a magnetic portal connection running from the sun, and we have a second one running from to this other black star that they're not telling us about. Also, when we're between the two stars, those magnetic portal connections are connecting and disconnecting on the opposite sides of our planet. When we're behind the sun relative to the black star, they're flip-flopping. They're on the same side of the planet. See what I mean? So there's a transition at outside orbit position whenever this relationship changes, and that's when we can predict the mass animal deaths. Because whenever the whenever this change happens, these magnetic portal connections switch from the same side of the planet to the opposite side of the planet. There's a transition period there of about 3 weeks. And during that 3 weeks is when the migrating animals lose their way. So it's very predictable. We've been able to predict it for the last couple of years. And the reason is because of the magnetics. So it's our Earth is bipolar. People are becoming more bipolar. The incidence of bipolar condition in human beings has increased by 40 times since 2003.
That's about true. No, it isn't. That's true. That's no, it isn't. Yes, it isn't. No, it isn't. Yeah,
oh, it's definitely true.
Telling, just kidding around. But the idea of a bipolarity, that's also, it's very interesting that the part of that is the basis of the technology to create magnetic motors is that quality of attraction, repulsion. And so when you've got this, so I'm seeing, right, I'm looking at the sun right in the center there, and the sun has this magnetic field which basically divides the solar system into its north and south, and where there is nothing, where there is no magnetism, is a kind of flat plane, and that's where all the bits are hanging out. That's what you're saying, is all the different planets hang out in that plane because they are also as north and south as the sun. So I'm just trying to get the effect of this thing. Like, I know you said it's in Virgo right now. How far away is it? And if I was looking at the sun, say, like I say, at dawn, you say it's at midnight position.
That's right. Because relative to the sun, the Earth is in Virgo. Well, the black star is in next door in Libra. So we're moving into Libra after Virgo, right? So as we're coming between the sun and the black star, then the black star is on the far side of the Earth relative to the sun. So it's in midnight position.
Right.
At the alignment. Now, so when you're asking me, how far do you think it's away? What I'm doing is I'm using the Earth as a measuring stick. We're looking at the magnetic pole migration. And the way the magnetic North Pole migrates is not in a straight line. It's in loops. And you can count the number of days within those loops, and you can see that they're getting longer, just like the days in my orbit diagram between my seismic events. Okay, so the magnetic North Pole migrates backwards when we're behind the sun and forwards when we're on the near side, so because the Earth is responding to the influence of another magnet. That's part of the case that I'm making, that there is definitely something there. However, now let me get back to your question about how far that is away. When you're using the seismic pattern in magnetics and stuff, then you're looking at the influence, and you can tell where it's at, but you cannot tell how far it is away. That's impossible, because the problem is, if this is a larger object with much more powerful magnetic polarity, it can be farther away and give us the same exact effect. But then what you have is the velocity that it's moving left in the orbit diagram. That's a key indicator. So in other words, Saturn is 10 astronomical units away, and it creates its own 189-day cycle, but it's circular. It's very predictable. But this object has an elliptical orbit. So whenever we had a 188-day cycle, if somebody wants to keyword that, we discovered the 180-day cycle, that represented a small segment of the orbit. Now, instead of having 375 days between our near-side alignment events, we have over 400 days. So we're looking at this object that's moving faster and faster and faster and faster. So whenever you gather, you look at the historical precedent, you look at the Bible, you look at everything, you know, that's been written on this, and you're crunching it together, then it seems to indicate to me that the Earth is crossing Earth orbit path, and I'm out of room in my orbit diagram, so May the 20th, 2014 is the date of the crossing. So if you run backwards a month, this thing is not very far away. Right? Now that's what the evidence appears to be indicating. But you have to remember also we're dealing with an anomalous object. It's an anomaly, unclassified by the automatic supercomputer at NASA and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. It's not something that they've cataloged. So I could be tricked by it. So my method is, I can predict the event. May of 2014, there's definitely going to be large solar flares, and there's going to be a gigantic earthquake event. We know that for a fact. But eventually this thing's going to be here, and the Earth is in the most vulnerable position in the entire orbit cycle on May the 20th, 2014. So that is the focus of my warning and telling people, like last year, May the 20th, I was in Arkansas with my survival group. You know, like that's what we do in preparing for this thing. And I encourage other people that are survivalists like me to meet with your group in the third week of May 2014 as if this threat is real. If it's not real, you go home and, you know, you're better prepared when the crap does hit the fan. If the thing is here, then you're safe. So that's the way that I'm trying to help people, not telling them what to do, but telling them what I do, and then they can decide for themselves. But what the science is telling me today is that these events are going to lead up to a geological pole shift, and that everybody needs to get away from the coast. And if you're in a seismic area, you need to get the heck away from, if you're out there on the coast of California, if you're anywhere around the Ring of Fire, that's where all of the events on this Black Star timeline are, Ring of Fire, Pacific Ocean, right? If you're near a dam that could break, get away from it. If you're near a nuclear power plant that could melt down, get away from it. And I would encourage you to subscribe to my newsletter and to get a threat assessment report for your location, and I will send you a map, a safe zone map, and give you a lot of pointers on what you can do to make your family safe for the least amount of money possible. That's what I do for people. In other words, the crap hits the fan. You do not need to go and buy a cavern, but you need to be inside a cavern to be safe. When the magnetosphere falls down, the Earth starts flipping over, solar flares start blasting the Earth. You see what I mean? That's the reason that the elite are running into the underground bunker cities. That's why the city under Denver exists, out there by the airport. That's why it's there. And millions of people are preparing to go underground, but this is the reason why. So I would advise people to plan a vacation, make reservations in a campground near a big cavern that has lots of room. And whenever crap starts getting really strange and funny and weird and the crap's hitting the fan, be at that cavern with your survival group and as many people as you can bring there, because the more people you have, the greater chance you have to represent a cross-section of your society, doctors, nurses, caregivers, teachers. That's what you're going to need in a survival situation. And the idea of digging a hole in your backyard is not going to work, because even if you were lucky enough to survive, then you're going to come out and Mad Max is going to be everywhere. Other people are going to survive. So develop yourself a plan and a strategy and then execute that plan on time and make sure that includes a survival group and guns and ammo and food and water purification methods and, you know, things like that. So that's what I encourage people to do. To become newsletter subscribers, go to terrell03.com, click on the subscriber button. It's $25 a year, and use me as a resource. You have a 1 year. You can send me questions. I talk to newsletter subscribers for sometimes hours at a time on Skype and help to build strategies, and they bring me news, and we share back and forth. And I think that it's a really, really great deal for people. And so anyway, that's what I would do to try to help people. But you are responsible as the leader of your survival group to do your own threat assessment, do your own contingency planning, and execute on time. I'm only going to assist you. So whenever things don't come out the way that I think they're going to happen, then nobody's going to blame me and say, oh, look, you told me this. No, the responsibility is on you. But I'm willing to be your supporter, your helper, and to give you the best information possible.
Here's a way of looking at this. When you're analyzing your previous data, you see that there is a tendency for cycles to appear, and that there is a tendency for certain things to happen on certain days according to the way these cycles have been running. And, you know, that seems to work. You know, we have a birthday every year, so you can say that every 365 days you're going to have a nice day. At least you can say that, you can rely on that, you know, at least, because when you say to somebody it's my birthday, you know, at least they give you a little nice thing. So that's the way we work in cycles. So we're working, and they're saying that there's a tendency for potential geological unrest because of this cyclicity as these things are going around. Now, I've been starting to learn about this thing that they call the electric universe, and that gravity is a wave and that suns and galaxies are electrical in nature, like big motors and stuff like that. So when you look at the Earth as not just a kind of bit of rock, but as a kind of conductive, maybe even like a circuit, because salts and, as you were saying, salts and crystals are semiconductors, and semiconductors can create transistors, and perhaps there is some kind of organic transistor construction that planets think with, you know, the equivalent of a silicon brain, and that we have an electric form. And this is what I was saying in the previous show about the etheric body of us is our electric form, and the planet has an electric form, which this is the thing that interacts with the, all the other planets. And at the moment, because there's something on the other side of us, there is an energy that is flowing to us, directly from the sun to us, and then from through us, because it's like we're being caught, impaled on the beam between it and the black sun. And the black sun, I presume from its color and everything, is a sucking thing. It doesn't radiate. It's a non-radiant thing. It absorbs. Is that right? Being a black hole.
No. All stars, they shed their outer skin. Whether it's a white dwarf, brown dwarf, black dwarf, they're shedding the very exterior. So a white dwarf transitions into a brown dwarf. And then the brown dwarf transitions. It's a transitional thing. Whenever they're developed, then, for example, on the periphery of our solar system, there could very well be a secondary gravitational vortex out there, so that when this dust cloud formed a secondary and tertiary, there could be more of them out there on the periphery of our solar system. We're talking about a peripheral dwarf now. Okay. Now this dust falls down into this gravity well, and the particle, the dust beats together. Everything is racing down to the bottom. And as they beat together, they heat up. And then the subatomic particles are broken apart. So you have electrons separated from neutrons, from electrons. Subatomic particles are released as photons. Those are the particles that reach the bottom of the gravity well first. Those subatomic particles that are released as photons. So then the race is on to get, and the gravity well is getting deeper and deeper and deeper, so everything is accelerating going down in there. So then next come the electrons, and they fill up all around this core of subatomic particles. And then come the neutrons, because they're not bumping together as much as the protons. They're the largest, and they're bumping together and losing velocity. So what happens for a white dwarf star is you have, it's like a tree ring. You have these layers of subatomic particles, which is like dust, electrons, neutrons, and then protons. When you're looking at that proton body, you're looking at the outer skin of protons, that's a white dwarf star. Whenever it's around for a billion years or 2 billion years, it sheds its protons, then it's down to the neutrons. What you have is a narrower gravity well that is relatively the same depth. So that's the reason it transitions into a brown dwarf, much more difficult to see. The first brown dwarf was discovered in 1995 using infrared equipment, right? Nobody's seen a black dwarf yet because, well, like I said, our solar system isn't old enough, but if this star turns out to be one, or if our solar system was old enough, then the neutrons would all shed also. The outer skin is unpacking, is what's happening. And then you get down to these electrons and this core. That's when you get a black dwarf star, micro lensing, the gravitational lensing effect is perfected, and you cannot see the thing. So we have scratched the surface in seeing brown dwarf stars. Nobody has ever seen a black dwarf star. And part of that is because, 70 astronomers engaged in dark star imaging research have been murdered or are missing since 1997. So they don't want us to have the technology to be able to see it. So that is the description of a peripheral dwarf, and it's a transitional dwarf, okay, that transitions through these different classifications. Okay, but a binary twin is going to be something that is a completely different animal. Instead of the falling down, well, for example, when you look at our sun, it's the same process as a peripheral dwarf, except where there was sufficient mass. There was the cloud was big enough so that that you got ignition, the explosion, and that stops the compression of all the subatomic particles, which makes our sun, you know, a normal sun. But a binary twin to our sun, this binary twin was likely much, much larger than our sun. Larger suns burn out much more quickly, right? So whenever it imploded, then we don't know what we got. But rather than the peripheral dwarf anatomy with the core and the layers, what you have is something totally different. You have a compressed. Everything is pushed together. So there's no space in between the subatomic particles, which is the same thing with the dwarf stars. There's no space in between those electrons. There's no space between those neutrons. They all collapse independently together. You see what I mean? That's what makes them so heavy and so dense. But this binary twin scenario means that all of that subatomic particle, whenever the explosion took place of our binary twin, it was all pushed together. So while this outer skin is being shed on these peripheral dwarfs, then this sun is actually decompressing.
We're going to unzip. Okay. We're going to relax, and we'll be back in a few beats of the solar maximum. Hey, don't go away. We'll still be here. And welcome back to Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I would really recommend buying one of those seed packs. I just want to give a really big shout out. I don't know if you're hearing it, Swami from Holland, thank you very much for your very kind donation. He's bought me a seed pack. He bought a couple of himself, and he's doing it. This is the way you donate to the seed, to the whole thing. You know, you get something back, and it also helps Mike keep on keeping on doing what he's doing, and the team keeping on doing what he's doing. So the DVDs, you know, if you want to hear what I've been talking about for the last year, and you can't be bothered to scroll back through you can't do it anymore. You can hear the archives of all my shows on Journeys with JP, that have been going for the last year, and I've been talking about some really interesting kind of background information that can help you build up your own big picture of really what's going on in the world and happening inside your own inner world, because there's a reflection of the outside and the inside, the up and the down and the esoteric and the exoteric. So, with that, we are, tonight accompanied in this part of the journey with a gentleman, Terrell, who has been well known to talk about the. I'm really interested, actually, Terrell. Yeah, what I'm really interested in is like the orbits of this thing. So we were talking about this thing, and it's going to be swinging by at midnight when we're opposite Libra. So that's right. Will we be able to see anything, perceive anything? Will there be, you know, any particular thing that we could be looking for even right now?
That's a very good question. If you have a telescope and you were looking out into that midnight sky, you would be looking for the gravitational lensing effect, which is the stars dancing in the background. You're not going to be able to see the object itself sitting inside of an extremely deep gravity well. It's like trying to look at a black hole. You're not going to be able to see it. But now that is leading up to the crossing event. The evidence seems to indicate that it does become visible later in the timeline, though. See, we talked about the crossing event. See, if we have a crossing event, then this object interacts with our planet when it crosses Earth orbit path. That's what's coming up. See, now, if we were farther around in orbit, then this object would cross Earth orbit path, and we would not suffer the geological pole shift, for example, if we're around in winter orbit on the outside of that horseshoe that I was explaining. But from what Christ explains in Matthew 24, which I believe is the event whenever this black star comes the next time in 3,600 years, then the sun actually turns dark. Remember we talked about the heliosphere that's shrinking? It shrunk 25% in just one decade. It looks like that when this thing gets right next to the sun, that the magnetic portal connection is going to become fully active, the black star, and like you were alluding to, it's siphoning electromagnetism off the sun through that magnetic portal connection, and it siphons off so much of the energy that the sun actually turns black. That's what you see in Revelation chapter 6. That's what you see in Christ's descriptions. He quotes Joel from Joel 2. He speaks of the sun turning dark, the moon not giving forth its light. If you go to the Old Testament, you can read about the earth is that it moves like a drunkard, and that would be like a spinning top that's lost its equilibrium. So these are some of the ways that I envision what's going to happen. But the answer would be no. On a spring crossing event, we never see it coming. And if you read Paul's words to the Thessalonians in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, I believe he explains how this happens. And he says that the sons of day will recognize the pattern, and it is the pattern as if a woman, the earth is a woman, and the birth pangs come closer and closer together. But then he says that the people are saying peace and safety, and then suddenly destruction comes upon them. So on a crossing event that happens in the spring, suddenly, this is a sudden thing, right? You have to recognize the warning signs leading up to the event in order to be spared of it. Now, if we move around in orbit, what I believe happens in Matthew 24 at the end of the age, I believe that there is a crossing event, but it's the one that happens in November. Now, if the people that are around for that event, then the Earth would be around deep in summer orbit when this thing crossed in the spring, in our spring position, and then it would come to perihelion, and then it would come near Earth on the backside of orbit when we're around in Pisces, and then we would have the geological pole shift type stuff, and there's plenty of opportunity to see plenty of signs that we're not going to be privy to, so that you would be able to see the sun turn dark, you would be able to see all the signs that Christ mentions there in Matthew 24, and then the end comes. If you go back to Zechariah, then it talks about the Mount of Olives actually being split in two. And that is the kind of scenario that happens when the black star is right on top of us. But I do not believe that's what's happening on this time. So, in other words, we can use the precedent, we can use the historical information to tell us what can happen, but not necessarily what's going to happen. And so I think that there are visible signs when this thing comes right next to the sun and begins to leave the outer solar system. But unfortunately, looking at the seismic data and all the charts and stuff, it looks like that we're not going to be privy to that. So everything happens suddenly. Even though we do see the Earth, we feel the birth pangs, we see the seismic activity coming closer together, we see the solar flare activity coming closer together, magnetic pole migration, mass animal deaths, sinkhole formations, the things, craziness that's happening in the world, intensifies, and we are called to recognize those signs and make our plans and act accordingly. So, no, I don't think that we're going to see it.
We're not going to see it coming, exactly as they say, you know, the thief in the night, except that the sons of day. Okay. The sons of day are presumably those who the workers of the light, you know.
That's exactly right.
And
so we are tabernacles of that light.
Exactly.
It's a consciousness. And it's actually a consciousness that contains this universe. And we are tabernacles of it. The sons of day, the sons of light that it's talking about, we're a tabernacle of that light. And that's where we have an advantage over everybody else, is that it's speaking not in our minds, not in our bodies, but in our hearts. And that's what's coming out in my testimony. And I'm a Bible, scholar. That's my background is scripture. And it led me into the 9/11 investigation. And then that led me into Project Black Star investigation. So I count myself among the sons of day that recognize the patterns. And, I'm laughed at a lot. I feel a little bit like Moses. Noah, telling everybody something's coming. my ship is the Holy Spirit. That's where the rapture comes in, 1 Thessalonians 4. So if you're a believer and you're one of these sons of light, there's nothing to worry about. Because as the events are happening suddenly, then all of a sudden we're caught up in the air and meet the Lord in the air. And the earth is terraformed. It's purified by water and fire. And then Elijah shows up and begins restoring all things, but by that time we're in heaven.
So would you equate that with fourth dimensional reality, fifth dimensional reality? I mean, because a lot of people speak the same story, paint the same picture using different language.
Right.
And you know, whatever it, you know, you might call it believers, or you might call it angels, or you might call it demons, or you know, it depends what you call things. But we're all talking about the same kind of event where there's some kind of resolution to the whole thing, and that people have a better time afterwards. It's like a burst of a boil, and the pus coming out, and then okay, right. So now that's over. Let's get on with it, kind of thing. What do you see as your I don't want to use the word post-apocalyptic vision, but you know, you want to live in a house? What's the deal? What do you want to live in the forest, in a cave? Do you have a kind of vision of, I mean, it's a bit like you know, people looking forward to getting married and the day of the wedding and all of that stuff, and after the wedding it's like, oh, I didn't realize there was this, you know, this kind of actually living the whole thing. Let's start. I mean, did you what branch of scripture did you come from? Let's put it that way.
What branch of scripture?
Yeah. I mean, were you brought up with a particular, like,
oh,
Protestantism, a Catholicism, you know, we come from an ism, you know, Jehovah's
right.
Witness.
I'm from a family of ministers, but most of the ministers in my father's family are more of the Pentecostal variety, which I'm not. And my mother was more of the Baptist, and I'm not a Baptist either. So I'm a non-denominational Christian, a member of Christ's body. I was saved by the blood of Christ, obeyed the gospel. Now I'm a tabernacle, and Christ lives in me, and God lives in him. And that's pretty much my background. My goal was to know the truth of Scripture, and that began when I became an adult. And it continued on, and then God showed me something very special, the three witnesses of spirit, blood, and water in Scripture. They're in Genesis 1:1, they're in every chapter of the Bible, and the Bible itself is three witnesses of spirit, blood, and water, just like you and me, with a spirit, soul, and a body. The Father, Son, and Holy Spirit are spirit, blood, and water. And if Adam, Eve, and her seed are spirit, blood, and water. That same pattern runs through the whole Bible. And once you can see the pattern, see, in my book, The Mystery Explained, there's 80 diagrams. Diagram number 60 A and B are lists, charts of three witness mystery sets from Scripture. And once you know that particular character is a water witness or a blood witness or a spirit witness, then you know from reading the Bible so many times their testimony. And then you realize that God is giving us just a little piece of that testimony in each water witness, in each blood witness, in each spirit witness, and they're all testifying about one another. And once you realize that, then you start hearing the angel song that's coming through, and you realize that this book is alive. It's a living, it's the only living document on earth, and it has the spirit of the Garden of Eden, of the Tree of Life. And that is the billowing spirit from the Scriptures that overshadows your spirit to beget the mind of Christ, from 1 Corinthians 2, verse 16. And that's our advantage right there. So I don't know if there's a denomination that's going to teach the three witnesses of God's living word. I've been looking for it for decades. Haven't found anybody else that discovered it yet. So that's the primary focus. Some newsletter subscribers subscribe only for Bible commentary. You know, I'm their tutor. They write me questions and I give them answers, and I'm helping them find their way. And my view is that we are already in heaven. We're there right now. We're almost infinite hosts that are there. This life is just a dream. And we're doing things that we've already done twice. The first time we did them was in an infinite realm where you're a God and I'm a God. And we're all members of one another. We have all incarnated inside of each other. That's where the Satanic Rebellion took place. Then the universe that contains this universe is an almost infinite realm. And we're standing there right now in the middle of a conversation. But since we're almost infinite, from our perspective here, then that's like Leo and Virgo having a conversation. From our perspective, then we're frozen motionless. But time here is catching up. So Satan has been thrown out of the infinite realm. He was thrown down into heaven. Michael the Archangel's chopped off the head of the dragon already. But from our perspective, that scene is frozen still. So his head is cut off, but it has not yet hit the ground. His tail is swiping across the sky, and Those are the bad guys. That's Obama and Bush and Rothschilds and all the bad, the evil, the people that you talk about, the evil that's in this universe actually comes from an infinite universe. But where I'm going to disagree a little bit with you is that the aliens that are here, they're all around us. If you go to 2 Kings chapter 2, start at verse 10, you'll see that Elijah jumped in a spaceship with him, and they took him to heaven. These are the God's custodians, and they've been here for millions and millions and millions of years already. But these people are akin to the six-day people. So if you read Scripture, you go to Genesis 1, start at verse 26, you see there's people there. And all of those people are Rh positive, and all of those people are beardless. Right, but then when you get to Genesis 2, you see there's a new group of people that come. These are the Seventh-day people, like you and me. We have beards, and we are from the infinite realm.
Yeah, but I'm A positive.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, all right.
That the Seventh-day people just have a percentage of negative blood, but we are the only primates on Earth that have it. Every other primate is Rh positive exclusive. The Chinese people are Rh positive exclusive and beardless. The American Indians are Rh positive exclusive and beardless, you see. The Aborigine people, Native peoples all around the planet, they've been here for millions of years, and they're akin to the aliens that are out there in space. So you talk about the reptilians, there's an amphibian group that's out there that came before the reptilians, and they're all Rh positive, and they're all beardless. But I listened to your commentary earlier, and you talked about that they're getting out of the way right now. Well, they need to get out of the way right now because the Black Star's coming, and they're under instructions. When the Black Star comes and terraforms the planet, they're going to show up. But until then, they are not supposed to interact with us. The reason is because God is selecting a select group of judges that are going to judge the world and the angels. And these are the gods from the infinite realm. Certain ones of them, the ones that I just described as the children of the day, of the light. That's why we're here. After the rapture, then our gospel is no longer in effect. God isn't saving people by faith anymore. He's saving them by faith and works. Gospel of the kingdom is going to be the gospel that Elijah preaches, and he's going to gather Israel to become a kingdom of priests. The kings are already chosen. We're already in heaven. So Satan is about to be chained. He's going to be put down in the pit, and he doesn't return until the end of the age. But then he and all of the members of his evil body incarnate on the earth as men. You and I will be sitting in heaven looking down on them when the Black Star comes the next time, and they will not escape. You see what I mean? We do escape this time, even though we don't see it coming. They do see it coming, and they do not escape at the end of the age. So these custodians that are out there in space, they're doing their job. And they're waiting for Elijah, the same guy they took up in the spaceship in 2 Kings. That's the guy they're waiting for. And you notice that they take the DNA from people, and they're trying to mix them together. What they're doing is they're trying to build a host body, because John the Baptist came before. That's who they were waiting for. And they watched him get killed. And so the mentality of these aliens is very much like children, very much innocent, extremely high technology, but they're like children. And they're scared. And they're afraid that Elijah's going to show up and he's going to be killed again. And what they're trying to do is create a host body so that if he does die again, then they will have a body that's ready. And the only way they could do that is by gathering the reproductive DNA from certain people, certain races, and mix them together in a certain way. Like I said, they're highly, highly technological, but they're like little kids. And they're being just a little bit disobedient because what I believe is that Adam told them when he was here what was going to happen. And they have a, like you mentioned Star Trek in one of your, you know, they have a non-interference.
The prime directive.
Yeah, they have a prime directive. They're not supposed to interfere during this period. The next period, they will be able to interfere, you know, like in the days of Elijah. They will be able to interfere. There's going to be great signs and wonders on this earth. People are going to once again live to be more than 1,000 years old. After the Black Star leaves. But we're in a critical period right now, this mystery time of Scripture. It's between the two veils of Scripture. It's in the holy place of the Bible where the mystery is hidden. Only certain ones of us can see it. That's part of my ministry, is to help people to see that, to help to guide them, showing them the signpost, because like I said, we are already standing in heaven. when the rapture happens, we don't go anywhere. We're already there. And it's just that our physical existence here, God ends it. And our angel half is reunited with our man half. It takes an angel and a man to go to heaven. That's the reason that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Because, and an angel can't go to heaven either. He has to have the man half. So the same way that the woman came out of the man side, the man has to go back inside the angel side. And then that singularity expression is what lives in heaven. And the cross that you mentioned, the cross inside of a circle is the symbol, the true symbol that we're looking for, because the cross is representative of a man and a woman. The man is the post that sticks in the ground. The woman is the cross beam that was taken out of his side when Eve was taken out. That cross beam being put back together again is the sign of the cross. And it's also the sign of the circle, because that represents the original singularity.
Yeah, and it's a temple. That's all temples are based on this crossing of the male and the female.
Well, when you study scripture more deeply, you'll realize that the temple is a tabernacle. It's Moses' tabernacle came first, and then David's temple, which Solomon built. But those are three witnesses. Three witnesses of spirit, blood, and water, just like I said, with two veils. The two veils separate the spirit part from the soul part from the body part, just like two veils inside of your body. So that temple is actually a tabernacle. What you see at the transition in scripture, if you go to Ezekiel 37 and start at verse 24, you'll see that there's a temple there, but then it's mentioned the sanctuary. When the sanctuary comes, that's whenever the temple is put back together again. There's no more court. There's no more holy of holies. There's only a holy place, and that's the singularity. That's the sanctuary. So that's what you're talking about. That comes later in the timeline, though. We have to go through a series of steps before the kingdom of priests have not yet been gathered.
Let me share.
You have a group of kings. The throne isn't served by kings. We judge the world and the angels, but we still have to have priests. The priests make intercession. Everyone in heaven gains access to the throne through the priesthood. Those priests have not been gathered yet. That's what the next 3,600-year period is for, and the preaching of the gospel, the kingdom under Elijah, when he comes to restore all things.
So let me share something with you.
Sure.
A few years ago, I kind of found myself in a kind of vision space, and I had it was a very brief moment that I was doing it with group energy, so I only had a very small amount of time, and I thought, what can I do with this? And I thought, I can go anywhere I like, see anything I want. I wanted to see when the comet passed the Earth. So I whizzed forward in time, and I saw this enormous red planet thing, sphere, spherical thing, that was kind of... Anyway, it was kind of angry. It's like a hot red, like the heat of a gas fire or something like that. That kind of heat, and it passed quite close to the Earth, and I could see material coming from the Earth to this thing. And in my the vision voice, the thing that was directing me was saying, iron filings. Like it was a huge magnet passing over iron filings, and it was pulling things up off the planet, off the Earth. And then I heard cleansing, and then the space finished. You know, the song ended, and we all had to go back. So this was a very small thing. This idea of iron filings being like things being pulled up, or, you know, iron things being pulled up off the planet, off the surface, to this big magnetic thing that's passing by. And that is a cleansing thing. And it was big and red. And then I start reading the Hopi prophecies that talk about the cleansing star, which is what they call the red kachina. And I hear all of these things and I think, are they all connected? So is there a space within your, understanding of the events for that kind of event?
Okay. The thing about the Hopi prophecies is they span hundreds of years. The recent interpretations have tried to compress all that into one thing. And when you read it, you'll realize that the earthquake of San Francisco, you know, that stuff was included in part of the prophecy. It goes over a long period. But the next thing is, anytime you're dealing with dreams or visions or things like that, then you're dealing with your higher self, and your lower self. Your higher self knows things that your lower self is not allowed to know. So you're always playing a game with yourself, your higher mind. It's like a parent-child relationship, you know, and the bad things out there that can kill you are like sex, you know, for your child. You're not going to sit him down at 5 years old and tell him everything, are you? You have to divvy things out according to his line of questioning. So you have a higher mind that is very much aware of things that are even beyond this realm. And then you have a lower mind that lives every day looking around using beta waves. And so that whenever you're trying to communicate between your higher and lower, then you really have to know somebody very well to understand the symbolism. And once I know your background and what things mean to you already, then the things that you say, the keywords that you use, can help me to identify those things. But I really don't know. And I just have to tell you that I don't know. But whenever you go into Revelation and look at the Wormwood scenario, that's kind of what you're explaining. We didn't wrap up with the binary, the difference between the binary and the peripheral dwarf. That's what we're at the end there.
Yeah, because I saw this brown dwarf. I had this idea of a brown dwarf.
The Nibiru deal has reddening of the skies, which is going to be an indicator of iron like you're talking about. The science, I believe, it's just not going to work. In other words, if a star got that close to us, it would siphon off, the magnetosphere would fail, number one, because no matter what the geologists tell you, the magnetosphere around our planet is provided by the sun through that magnetic portal connection. The reason that the Earth magnetosphere is weakening is because the heliosphere is shrinking because the sun is the energy, the electromagnetism is being siphoned off. So we should expect the heliosphere to shrink and Earth magnetosphere to shrink proportionately or to weaken proportionately. Okay. But whenever this black star would get closer, and particularly if it had orbitals, then, because that's what you would be describing, this red thingy that you're describing, right? For it to be able to get close enough in proximity, because it has to get close to be able to do that, because the Earth is very powerful. Now, look at the way that even the Moon's very powerful. Look at the way it moves our waves, and it's, you know, a quarter million miles away. It's very powerful, but it has to be very close to do that. So this black star would have to be extremely close to be able to do that. And the likelihood is that the magnetosphere would fall and that all of the atmosphere would be sucked off of this planet before the first speck of iron was pulled off. So you see that in these 2012 movies, these movies that, the Transformer movies, where you see all these big giant metal objects being sucked up. It could not work that way in real life. So the idea that all the metals are going to be sucked off this planet by another star, or another planet or something like that, I really don't think is possible. At least what would be left of our planet would not be inhabitable. And since I know from reading ahead of time in the prophetic word what happens, then I would say that your higher self was trying to communicate a very important truth to you without scaring the crap out of you. That's the way that our higher mind, if you look at your upper three chakras, three power centers, look at them as a spirit, soul, and a body. Look at the third eye as the soul part in the middle. That is what testifies for the original singularity. So just imagine those three are one thing. But they're temporarily, just like man has a spirit, soul, and body, temporarily, because we're supposed to be singularities. Our spirit and our soul and our body are supposed to be the same thing, like Adam in Genesis 2:7, but it's not. So your upper three are a person. Your upper three chakras are a person of spirit, soul, and body, and your lower three chakras are a person of spirit, soul, and body. It's just one's a lower self, and it has limited capability. It can only think using the lower part of the spectrum, the beta waves, and then your higher self is going to have access to heavenly realms that your lower self cannot even begin to comprehend. But when your survival comes into play, your lower self is what's going to save you, not your higher self. Higher self gets you killed. Too much thinking, and you need to be acting, you see. So every person walking around has this same relationship with a higher mind and a lower mind. And when you're dreaming right now. People ask me to interpret their dreams without realizing that they're dreaming all the time. This communication between your higher and lower selves is happening all the time. It's just when you're coming out of deep sleep, it slows down for you. And you're able to take note of what's happening, which is actually happening at an extremely rapid pace. Your mind is extremely quick These things are happening very fast, faster than your lower self can comprehend. So what exactly was it that you saw is going to depend on the lessons that your higher self is trying to show you at the time. If it's trying to warn you of an impending event, it could be using that same those same symbols. You see? So, but for me to be able to tell you exactly what all that means, it's going to be subjective and it's going to be require interpretation. And you know how it is when you get into interpretation and a subjective situation.
I like that though. That, you know, subjective can be good. You know, you don't always. I mean, you start off with what you've been taught, and then you go on with what you learn, and then you realize what you already are. And those are the things that you've been talking about there: the lower self and the higher self, and how we can almost regard them as several people. And I like to say that, you know, we're a colony in our being. You know, all of our organs are separate people.
The key is that the place where the speaking takes place needs not to be within your ears, not between your ears. It's not a mind thing. It's a heart thing. When you realize that in the speck, if you're aware of the speck, that's the part of the third eye, you can put it anywhere. If your speck is between your eyes, then you're doing a higher self operation. When your speck is in your heart, you see, that's the difference. And that's where when your thought is from your heart, then your lower self and your higher self can work together in the space that overlaps. And that is the realm of the soul. That's what the soul is, where your spirit and your body overlap. That's what it is. And it's in the realm of the soul that all of these things can make sense. Not in the physical self. Not in that higher mind spirit physical self either. That's not the intellectual part is not the answer. And the physical part is not the answer. It's the soul part that's in the middle. And once we climb that high along the mountain, then we see things much, much more clearly.
Well, looking at the soul, this is part of the seven ray teachings that I've been spouting on about for the last couple of years as well, because it's to determine the ray energy of the soul. Have you come across the seven rays?
Oh yeah, these are things I studied as a teenager, and I studied Chinese religion and Hindu religion and read Thinking and Destiny by Harold Baldwin Percival and understood the Masons and their Immaculate Conception. And we live on seven planes, and that's what you're talking about. Each chakra is on those seven planes. And men occupy the first, the third, the fifth, and the seventh plane. You know, we're more physical. Women are more emotional. Men are more mental. Women are more intuitional. So that's the reason that it's like Mars and Venus, is because the chakras in our body. So remember, that woman part was pulled out of the side of man. Our hearts are actually broken. The heart chakra, what we're supposed to have is three lower, three upper, and three in between, laying sideways. That's the cross part. That cross part is woman. So when you take that part and pull it out and stand it up, take those upper three, and then that upper singularity, and you make that into three, take that lower singularity and make that into three, that's what a woman is. So she occupies, and her strengths are the emotional plane, the intuitional plane, and the the etheric plane. So they have the strengths on those levels that man cannot even begin to compete with. We're not equal. Women is superior in those realms. We are superior in the other four, but together we make a man. So the male and the female make the man. So yes, very, very aware of the seven rays and the seven planes, the seven power centers, how we live on seven planes right now, and how the vast majority of our population think out of their gut. In reality,
That's if we're lucky. That's if we're lucky. Right. We have been joined by an old friend.
Hi, Jacker.
How you been, Terrell?
Very good. You need to
closer
speak up
in.
Just a little,
closer
just
in.
A little bit.
Lean forward.
Yeah, okay.
There you go.
I'm going to try here.
Yeah, try. Well, lean forward. That's it.
Go on. Yeah, two questions. I'll give you the easy one first, and then the second one's more combative. But the first one is, don't you find it interesting that we're coming up to this astrological, and maybe JP, you can add some light to this field, astronomy, astrological, astrology, grand cardinal, square crossing or whatever that's not happened for eons, and that we're going to have the first of the blood moon on the 15th of April, and then we're going to have this grand crossing where everything is 13 degrees off, Saturn, Uranus, Pluto, Jupiter. I forgot what the four of them are, but that's coming up the 23rd and 24th. In other words, we've got a really big bump in the road coming in which, unless people that are in astrology, unless they can prove something or something major happens, you can almost put those fields to bed. So what do you think of that, Terrell? And then how about you, JP, because I know you know a little bit about that stuff too. Go ahead, and then I got one more question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a lot lost a little bit. Mars is kind of there, but we're going to pass in April. The Mars will be in opposition to the Sun here in April. And like you said, but Mars is not going to be a player. Doesn't have a magnetic portal connection, does not have a magnetosphere. So electrically, it's not going to be connected. Well, and that just reminded me of what JP was talking about, the electric universe. We didn't really get to explore that. But I think what you're asking about is a convergence of different researchers like Paul LaViolette and my work and others that are pointing towards May of 2014. There seems to be a lot of activity that's going to happen through that period. But I'm not basing any of my research on what other people are doing. This is a black star timeline. It has seismic events on the chart. And we know when the lulls are. We know when the upticks are. And magnetic pole migration agrees with the seismic cycle, agrees with the shrinking heliosphere. And so I'm looking at all those signs as something that's happening. I hope that it doesn't happen now, obviously, but I'm afraid that it is. So I have to prepare myself and warn others. I'm responsible to warn others. So I'm warning you, and you can do what you want.
Let's just repeat that your window of tendency for things to slip are May and November. Is that right? So while
we're not going to worry about the crossing on the backside yet, but the crossing on the inside in the spring. So if this thing crosses Earth orbit path, he's going to cross Earth orbit path the first time in the spring. If we move around in orbit and it comes in behind us, then it leaves in November. So let's don't worry about November at all. Let's worry about the threat that's right in our face right here in May. It's possible that we're dealing with an anomalous object, and it is moving. It tricked me on the last cycle by my event was supposed to happen October 10th through the 12th, and it happened on the 25th. Now, whenever we draw the line out in the constellations, it means it moved way faster than I thought. So it can trick me again. It's possible. You know, my modeling is off. And you have to, you know, science is all about trial and error. And whenever you see where your model's off, then you have to go back and do your recalculation.
Yeah, because normally there's an extra factor. It's a higher dimensional solution because what you thought was a straight line is actually a curve. And so that's why
there's a big giant bush in the way and you can't see what's behind it in your research, then that means you, whenever the event doesn't happen, then we look, because something is going to happen. Definitely. We're going to have big giant solar flares. And we're going to have an alignment event like Fukushima. That's going to happen for sure. Now, does it mean a geological pole shift's going to happen? It's a possibility, but I don't know 100% for sure. But just because it doesn't happen on May the 20th doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. We can move around in orbit. We're still susceptible to a 180-degree variety geological pole shift through June because it's still going to be close enough to us relative to the sun. After July, then we're looking at a 90-degree variety shift. And that continues on through August and September, and then we're susceptible to the 180-degree variety shift when we get near the crossing event on the backside. Do you see what I mean? So I'm warning about May the 20th because that is the 180-degree variety geological pole shift that can bounce the Earth around like a cork in the water. It can be devastating if it's here. So I would rather prepare, hope for the best, and prepare for the worst, just like the military. Prepare for the worst-case scenario and hope for the best. That's what I'm doing, and that's what I hope you guys are doing. I do not know 100%, though. I have to just tell you, because I've been tricked before, and it's possible. I have more data today than I've ever had, but it's possible I can be tricked again. But I can tell you 100% for sure, I'm running out of space in the orbit diagram for this to take very much longer.
Well, so, Terrell, this is where I want to check you. We know the history of mankind, and we know how brutal it has been for us for our 5,000-7,000 years. You know, we know it all. It's not been good to us. To the kings and queens, they've had a pretty good run. But these archons, these grays that you talk about, you say they're good guys, but there's no evidence for it. I mean, I have evidence. I mean, I can see these reptilian-eyed, shape-shifting people that got control of all the money and the financing and the military and the media. And there's just no good thing that comes out of it, as well as people say every time they deal with the grays or whatever, that they are giving high technology to these psychopaths who run this world. So a lot of us think that they're the fallen ones, hell, and that they are, the great deception is coming, that they're going to act like, you know, like the grays are going to be the bad guys and the reptilian good guys, that they're setting us up for a great deception. So where do you get that these people, these aliens, quote unquote, where's the evidence that they've done anything good for mankind? Where?
Okay, that's a difficult question. I referred to 2 Kings chapter 2, started verse 10, where Elijah jumped in their spaceship and they took him to heaven. But the grays are not a race. You have to understand that. The grays are not a race of anything. They are genetically created to run the spaceships. The people that created them are extremely tall. They're beardless. They're extremely intelligent. And the reptilian connection that you're making goes back to the Garden of Eden, the sons of the serpent, right there. Those are the people that own the banking system and the Rothschilds. Those are the people that are creating the negativity or murdering on this planet because we're doing what we've already done before. In other words, the serpent represents Satan. Satan and his minions in the infinite realm, that's where the satanic rebellion took place. What you're describing is the aftermath of the satanic rebellion, but in reality it's happening for the third time. So what happens in your spirit happens first, the soul second, and then in the physical body. So that's the infinite realm, the almost infinite realm that I described, which is heaven, and then this physical universe. So the reptilian people that you're seeing, what I really believe is happening is that in your higher mind, because you're an extremely intelligent man, in your higher mind, it's very powerful, and it's giving you these images, and it's showing you the serpent, but it's not what you think it is. But in your lower self, you're trying to make reason and sense out of it. But the reality, I believe, is going to be that the reptilian race is going to be referenced to Rothschild and the banking system, just like you said. But the grays have nothing to do with them. The grays work for the alien races that have been here for millions of years.
And yeah, but Terrell, there's too many people that have seen reptilians that have been overseeing the grays. And also, when you deal with the grays, it's all about secrecy, abduction, mm-hmm. taking
but
sperm,
this is a good
taking
thing.
Egg.
This is a good thing. The relationship that the aliens have with the House of Rothschild is short-lived. They are doing what they're doing right now to placate Rothschild from destroying the entire planet. Remember when you go to Matthew 24, if something wasn't done, then no flesh would exist on this planet. It would all be killed. The same thing is true today. So the grays, as you're speaking of, they are actually going to be the drones that are driving around these spaceships. They're just an intermediary. But if you were that other race out there, wouldn't you want people to think that was the alien race? It's not. They are much highly more sophisticated, much more advanced, much taller, much sleeker, much more beautiful than the grays. These guys are made to their drones for the spaceships. So what I think that you're seeing is the battle. It's a heavenly battle between the dragon and the good guys. That's us. And we're being killed. And you see the House of Rothschild, Rockefeller, Gates, eugenics is what's spraying chemtrailing on us. I know this is not a JP topic, but the nanites that are inside of our body, they are put there by the House of Rothschild. He has total control over remember the H1N1, the biological weapon? That's a binary weapon. It's artificial intelligence assisted. That's what the nanites are for. They're planning to kill everything on this planet. But you see, there's a relationship there. The artificial intelligence that they got is not created by man. It's a life form, silicon-based life form. Came from the aliens. But you see, the aliens are good guys, but they're not telling the House of Rothschild that. This is counterintelligence that they're running. Rothschild thinks that. but that's not what's going to happen. Rothschild's going to lose this battle.
Here's the problem, Terrell. You say we're going to go for another 500 years or 3,600 years.
That's right.
And then Jesus is going to come. But what these people are going to be in their bunkers. They got the technology. They got the underground railroads and cities and everything. This black dwarf is going to come through. It's going to waste most of us. Then it's going to go back out. All of these evil people that have got these reptilian human hybrid genes to them, they're going to pop back up with all their money, with all their weapons, with all their control. And so we can see in as little as, I think it was Eric Schmidt said, in as little as 5 years, a human being will be able to talk to a robot, a robotoid, and not know that person, that's not a real person. So we're coming into the age of singularity. Where's the bump in the road? What's going to free us from all this stuff? Go ahead. No,
the super soldiers are already among us. They have silicone implants, and they are artificial intelligence assisted. They're already here right now. The bump in the road is that the underground cities that are holding the Rothschilds and those guys are all going to fill with magma, earth magma. The earth is going to crack open and kill them all. There's not only a rapture of the righteous, there's a rapture of the unrighteous. So just like I explained earlier that we're already standing in heaven, those of us that are the sons, we're already there. But these bad guys are already in the lake of fire. They're already there. Their physical incarnation here will end, and they're already there now. They just don't know it yet. But all of this is according to God's plan. The trap that they're getting ready to spring is going to trap them. They're not going to be any of them around on this earth whenever Elijah gets here to restore all things. Even if any one of them survived, Elijah can destroy this entire world with a wave of his hand if he wants to. Or he can raise the dead, all the dead, if he wants to. This is the most powerful thing that has ever been on this planet, Elijah, when he comes to restore all things. And he is going to tell everybody what to do, even the aliens in space. They're all going to do exactly what he tells them to do because he's their father. He's the father of the aliens. He's the father of the Jews. He's the father of the Arabs. He's the father of the American Indians and of the Chinese. He's everybody's father. He's Adam. He's going to tell everybody what to do. And he's going to restore the kingdom to Israel to make them a kingdom of priests, and so that God's throne is served by that kingdom of priests at the end of the age. Well, that's what's going to happen. And this is going to come out good for us. So just let Rothschild, the lettered agencies, artificial intelligence, they're all listening to us right now. They know everything that you're doing, every keystroke, every single thing, but they're going to lose. So you just have faith in that. That's what's going to happen.
Oh, I do. I just don't want to set people up for a great deception to think that the Greys are our friends and they're going to help us and, you know.
No. It doesn't work that way. They have to stay out of the picture until Elijah gets here. When Elijah gets here, they're going to come down from their spaceships, and they're going to come before him, and they're going to kneel because he is the king of this entire universe. He was king of this entire universe for hundreds of thousands of years in the past. People think that Adam was only here for 7,000 years. No, he came into a human skin in Genesis 3:21. He was here for hundreds of thousands of years before that as that soul singularity from heaven. He could walk on this planet. He could tell everybody what to do.
Okay, one final thing, Terrell, and then I'm going to jump. Final thing is that we got due dates coming up, Day of Judgment dates, both for you because you're making a prediction, but also the astrologers and astronomers because we got this grand alliance, these blood moons coming up here in April. Do you think that the government is just going to let things go all the way up until the 20th of May? Or are we looking at a geopolitical major movement where they go to war footing, open martial law? I mean, do you think they're going to be proactive before
this thing hits? That's a good question.
Go ahead. Thanks, JP, for letting me on.
Okay. This is the way that it works. Just imagine you're doing threat assessment for the House of Rothschild. That's what I do for you guys. You guys that sign up. I do your threat assessment and let you know what's coming. Well, the House of Rothschild spends billions of dollars on threat assessment. Yes. Brightest people in the world, artificial intelligence, everybody. But they cannot calculate the threat level of the Black Star. They didn't know what's going to happen. So when you're in that scenario in the military, you do not create additional threats. They are not going to start martial law. Right. Another reason they're not going to start martial law is because they're really afraid of lone wolf. There are tens of thousands of lone wolf soldiers in the United States, ex-military, ex-black op people. These guys are they're highly trained, highly skilled, highly armed, communication experts, and it only takes one of those guys to get in the underground arc facility to kill all of them, and they know it. So they do not want to create an additional threat. If they try to lock everybody down, Black Wolf is going to mobilize. They don't want Black Wolf, Lone Wolf to mobilize. They want him to stay just exactly where he is, right? So their plan is to use artificial intelligence to release the H1N1. Everybody already has. It displaced the regular flu long ago. You already have the H1N1 in you. All they need is the other half, the mutagen, and that is artificial intelligence activated. So they've already got a plan to kill everybody. All this other stuff about FEMA camps and that is smokescreen stuff. And they're trying to scare Lone Wolf. They're trying to get him to make a purchasing mistake. They're trying to make him make a communication to somebody else because Lone Wolf works alone generally. But if they can get him to make a purchase, if they can make him to get outside of his comfort zone and make a mistake, then they can kill him. That's what a lot of this is about. Another thing is there's many sleepers. When you understand the sleeper ops, then everything makes sense. So the people that are not invited to the underground arc cities, the ones that are working right beside Rothschild, right in the CIA, right in the lettered agencies, in our military, that are not going to the underground arc cities, something has to be done with them. Because if they wake up, there's going to be a civil war, and they're going to want to go to the underground arc cities, right? So you're seeing all these training exercises with our military, with Russia's military, the lettered agencies, millions of people going through earthquake drills and things like that, because those are sleepers. Now, you're going to see a lot of those kind of drills, and you are going to see a false flag event that happens just prior to these events, okay? And the reason is because they have to deploy the sleepers into harm's way at the same time that the Rothschild and his elite are running to the underground arc cities. It's going to be bang, 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 very quick. Everything is already pre-planned, okay? So there is a reason for it. Yes, there's going to be an event, but it's not going to be one where that happens months ahead of time that they run the risk of activating Lone Wolf and things like that. It's going to happen at the last second.
Terrell,
happens. Yes, sir.
You speak of Lone Wolf as if it's one person. Is that something that has been planned on by themselves? I'm not entirely clear what you mean by Lone Wolf.
Okay.
Like, is that a specific project? Like an MK Ultra project that was designed to create the guy who could change the world.
No, there's no centralized hub. That would defeat the whole purpose. These are people, I know some of them, extremely intelligent, extremely well armed, and they are just waiting for the whenever this scenario that Hijacker was trying to describe of, you know, knocking down bridges so people can't leave cities, barricading people so that they can't get to safe zones. Whenever that kind of stuff happens, that's when Lone Wolf, this is a guy that feels like he's like me, like I'm a spirit of light that's a protector. That's the way that these guys feel. And they're not going to go they're not going to go postal. They're not crazy people, but they are righteous people. And whenever they see that Americans are being murdered in the streets by Blackwater-like mercenaries, then they are going to mobilize. And these are not the kind of guys that fight you face-to-face. They are assassins. So they kill the Blackwater Mercs the night before they deploy in their beds. These are people that poison. These are people that use the same weapons against the military that the military has to use against us. Extremely sophisticated. So that our military people are more like robots. Our lettered agency people are chosen to be followers. You know? But these Lone Wolf people are not like that. They are outside the box kind of people and extremely religious, and they feel like that there's going to be a need for their services, and they're going to defend the people whenever the crap hits the fan. Like if something like is happening over in Ukraine cannot happen in the United States, we have tens of thousands of these guys. Anybody, the Chinese or anybody that tried to come inside here, or even if the Obama administration keeps doing what they're doing, you know, the government is getting out of hand here. You know, and people are disappearing. And the detention centers and stuff like that, whenever those things get out of hand and people are being murdered, then the Lone Wolf is going to mobilize. And he is going to take action into his own hands, and he, and, you know, there's nobody that's going to be safe.
Okay, we get you.
Child will not be safe, yeah.
Terrell, we got very small amount of time left. How do people hear you again? Have you got a website, an email, you know, stuff like that? Please let it out as fast as you can, because we've got a little bleepy thing.
TERRAL03.com. That's my website. There is a Bible section, a 9/11 section, and a Project Black Star section. The way you get my email address is to become a newsletter subscriber or donate to the research, and then you get my email address, I get your email address, so we can set up communications. And then I, if you want threat assessment report or whatever you want, then I work with you, stuff like that. I'm also here on Revolution Radio, here on Studio B every Friday night at midnight with Aurora. Her radio show is called The Next Level. And I open the show the first 30 minutes and give a 30-minute update report on the Black Star, the Earth changes, and the things that we see, things that we think are going to happen. And you guys see me here every Friday night with Aurora.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much. I'll be back on Wednesday on Studio A at, what is it, 6 Eastern for another Strange Universe. Then I'll be back on Friday, and I'm always here. Thank you very much. I love you all. Bless your heart. Thank you. Lone Wolf, start howling, my friend. Good night.